This is Roadshow and Tell, mixed for Radio 1 RPH, a show where we visit specialty museums so you can learn things you never knew you wanted to. In the vast red expanse of Australia's outback lies the town of Broken Hill. A speck on the map, home to 18,000 people, Broken Hill is a 13-hour drive from Sydney or 6 hours from Adelaide. On the fringes of town, on a dusty plot, stand a pair of fibro sheds that are the Broken Hill Mosque Museum. Here, an untold story awaits. It's a reminder of the significant contributions of Muslim immigrants who shaped trading routes, ventured into uncharted territories, and built early inland infrastructure. Sadly, it is an overlooked chapter in our shared history. During the late 19th and early 20th centuries, Afghan Kemalis led camel trains through this unknown and arid land for trade, supplies, and surveying. On these routes, towns emerged, their city limits expanding to include Afghan camps for the drivers of the camels. Towns like Coolgardie in Western Australia, Maree, Bourke, Cloncurry, and Alice Springs all housed Afghan camps and eventually also erected modest mosques. The Broken Hill Mosque remains largely unchanged from when it was built in the 1890s. Constructed with wood and corrugated iron, it includes a prayer room in a small adjoining anteroom, which was historically used for washing. Two olive trees at the entrance to the property, planted by the Islamic Council of New South Wales in 2008, provide shade to the mosque. We speak to caretaker Bobby Shamrose, the son of prominent Afghan cavalier Shamrose Khan and grandson of the last mullah. He shares the incredible story of the mosque, his ancestry, and the brave cavaliers who traversed the outback of a foreign land. The Broken Hill Mosque is on the traditional lands of the Wilyaki people. Today I'm with Bobby Shamrose at the Broken Hill Mosque Museum. Bobby, how are you today?
Very good, thank you.
That's good. Mosque, an outback mosque, how did this happen?
Well, in the early days, when the camels came out to the outback, the old Afghan folks came out with them. And yeah, some of them ended up here in Broken Hill.
While they were called Afghan cameliers, they weren't all from Afghanistan. It wasn't even a country at that stage. They came from areas that are now Pakistan, India and Afghanistan and belong to predominantly four main ethnic groups: Pashtun, Baluchi, Punjabi and Sindhi. They were nicknamed Afghans as it was easier and they were Muslim.
And so they decided to stay here and work the camels here. But before they got going, I think they built this little mosque here. And there was another one out the west of Broken Hill. They built that one too. But there was only, in the finish, there was only two people out there. So in 1903, they built that other little mosque down here and planted it at the back of here, the little one at the back of this. And they just left it there. And apparently they used it for the caretaker that was looking after the mosque at the time.
So there were two mosques here?
There was one out the west and one there, but the little one out the west was just that little shed thing at the back there. And they brought that down here in 1903 on the Jinka. And the other two blokes, they came down there and mingled with the rest of the blokes, because as you can see around here, it's a big camp around here. It's a big area. There was nothing here but the mosque in them days and a couple of houses around the place. This one, they say in 1887 in some books, and in other books they say in 1891. But what I can think about, they probably started to build it in 1887 with what materials, and they had little bits and pieces. And by the time they finished, it would have been 1891. And my dad and granddad, they used to come down here and pray. My dad came out here in 1894 from India, a Peshawar, whatever president. And my granddad came out here a couple of years earlier than dad, but he landed at Fremantle over the west and he worked his way out here. He finished up in Broken Hill. And dad, I'm not quite sure if he got off the boat down at a place called Port Abbott in Victoria or in Port Augusta. But he had a lot to do with Port Augusta in the early days, because he used to buy the camels in Port Augusta, then he'd bring me overland to Broken Hill and sell them. He's more like a dealer too, you know. He had heaps of camels.
Afghan cameleers were integral to Australia's development as a nation. Camel trains, also called caravans, were at the heart of every major inland development project. In an era before roads and railways, these caravans were the lifeline that would transport essential goods. Their trade brought much-needed supplies like water, mail, and equipment to inland towns, fueling their progress and prosperity. Within a decade of the first cameleers arriving, Afghans, with their camels, had built the Overland Telegraph from Adelaide to Darwin. And the famous train line from Port Augusta to Alice Springs pays homage to their work on this. It was previously called the Afghan Express, which was then shortened to the GAN. Between 1870 and 1920, approximately 20,000 camels and 2,000 to 4,000 cameleers landed in Australian ports. At its peak, there were an estimated 400 South Asians living in Broken Hill. Camel drivers led hundreds of camel trains throughout inland Australia in the 19th century, and their travels mean that they were among the first non-Indigenous people to view iconic landmarks of Central Australia, such as Catatuga and Uluru. This also meant that they established camps in each hub on the camel trade routes. These were known as GAN towns.
So those early cameleers, why did they bring camels instead of horses or anything, another cattle?
What happened was it would have been the blokes like Kidman and Elder, people like that. They would have had the camels come out here, a lot of it from Karachi, a place called Karachi apparently, most of them. And they brought some of the antlers out with them. And well, I think what's happened was when they came out with the camels, they were probably offered the job of working them.
The cameleers would come to Australia on temporary work contracts that didn't allow for women or children to join them.
So that's how it come about. They were all around here. They used to go up the Tuba, down to Victoria, down to Wentworth, White Cliffs, Wilcannia, all around. There was other camel drivers too that were up in Bourke. That bloke kept his name here. He's got a book, Wade, Abdul Wade's book. But there was lots of cameleers here. But some of them married Aboriginal women. Like that bloke on the end, he married an Aboriginal woman. And they lived down here, around a couple of blocks down. And most of their family grew up in Broken Hill.
The Aboriginal populations and Afghan cameleers shared strong connections, and intermarriage was quite common. Both groups found themselves segregated from the European settlers who resided in the central areas of the GAN towns. Instead, they lived on the outskirts, leading simpler lives. Unfortunately, both communities faced discrimination and marginalisation at the hands of the European settlers during those early days. In her work, Australian Armour, writer Samia Khatun found that various Aboriginal languages preserve references to Afghan cameleers. For instance, in the Arabana language, spoken near Maree, a significant hub on the camel trade route, the word Abiganas was used to refer to Afghans. Aboriginal language histories along these camel routes are rich with mentions of cameleering culture, often containing fragments of South Asian songs and phrases intertwined with them.
So they've a lot of descendants of the early cameleers are still around.
Yeah, they've still got a lot of them around. I'm the only one left around here now. In my family.
So about this building, it's quite small. So how many people was it built for to pray here?
The building here was only like a prayer room. And this was an ante room. This is the way they used to come in and walk into there. They'd take their shoes and everything off before they went in. Actually, they took their shoes off outside back in them days. But seeing it's only a museum, wash museum now, people can leave their shoes on in this area because I get a lot of school kids too, you know, here. And then if they want to go in there, they can take their shoes off and go in there and have a look.
And what's the history of this building as a museum?
Well, it's lucky to be still here. For the simple reason is when my old grandfather died, all the land around here, as you can see, there's no houses or nothing around here back in them days. It was all open and all the old camel blokes, they just have little humpies around here living in that. Camel yards are at the back here. And that's why they turned it into a museum, because no one came here. And the council was going to knock the building down. And the bloke on the council stopped them from doing it. Otherwise, there'd not be no history left here. The only time I had anything to do is when I started to do work with the history in it, because I know a bit about the history of being a dad and my grandfather. And it was falling down. The floors and all were all broken. And anyhow, my old, but as you can see here now, there's a lot of stuff not back in here yet, because when they renovated it, they took everything out and packed it all up.
So it needed a lot of restoration, Mark?
Yeah. They spent a bit of money here, but not enough. And in September, they're going to have an opening day here, because they're putting all new cabinets in and all little tablets, instead of having that big thing there going, all little tablets. And so people can come in and just press and they can read the story and things like that. Yeah, hopefully it happens before I go. I haven't been too good myself.
So, Bobby, why should people come and visit the Mosque Museum?
Well, they should come and have a look at the history and see how hard they worked in the early days. It weren't just Afghan cameleers. There's a lot of Aussie cameleers here too. Not only here, all around the place. And that's why the country's like it is now, because that they have transport. Some of them, I've got photos there of one bloke with a camel team 400 miles to go to deliver stores and to bring wood and that back.
And Bobby, what's your favourite part of the museum?
My favourite part of the museum is telling people about it.
Yeah, just telling the stories,
you know.
Speaking of stories, Bobby has an incredible story.
All my family's gone, and my grandma's family and my mum's family, they're all dead. Oh, I'm the only one left out of them. I had a brother and a sister, but with the running away business, see, my mum left when I was only 4 years old. She left and it took off and left Dad with the three kids, because my old daddy was 63 when I was born. And Mum was only 24. And I think after a few years, being an older chap, and Mum was only a young girl, I'd say she would have been about 17 or 18 when she was with Dad. And how that come about was, back in them days, they had the Depression and all that. And my grandma, she had 14 children. Two of them had died. And Grandma was only a young woman when she died. She was only 49 when she died. And she died in 1949. And Dad was pretty wealthy. Dad had houses there and camel business and that. And, you know, he used to do a lot of hawking too. You know, he used to go up to the Menindee or Wilcannia and that places and sell like clothes and things like that to the Aborigine people too, you know, up there. When he finished with the camels, he worked on the mine, because the camels had finished in 1929.
With the conclusion of the First World War, the demand for camel trains and the presence of Afghan cameleers in the Australian outback dwindled. Motorised vehicles had taken over as the primary mode of transportation for people and trade, rendering the need for camels obsolete. Unemployment loomed over the once vital cameleers, pushing them towards day labouring and hawking as a means of survival. Eventually, the camels and their skilled handlers faded from the outback, becoming mere remnants of a bygone era. During the 1940s, Bobby's father held on to a few camels, providing joy rides for local children and a reminder of the past in a changing world.
No one wanted the camels anymore because they had motor lorries coming out, you know, cars coming out.
Oh, yeah.
But occasionally they'd be using a camel team to maybe cart a bit of wool or works for the mines. I've got some photos I can show you after if you want to.
Okay.
And what happened was, I think my wife asked my mother in later years when my mum come back and I started, you know, to get in contact with her again, because I hadn't seen her for years. And my wife asked her how she met Dad, you know, and she said, well, love, it was like this back in them days. Things were pretty hard. And my dad owed Bobby's dad money for camels and for rebuilding the house. But Dad rebuilt the house for him for nothing. I know that. The house got burnt down and Dad had it rebuilt for him. And she said, oh, it's the deal. She said she was the deal. But I don't know. I don't believe that.
So that's how your parents met.
Yeah. And I think what happened to my old grandma, she probably said, you get on to old Sammy, you'll look after. He's got plenty of money. The bit where Mum met Dad. That was all right. Was having a good life for a couple of years until Mum went. When she went, I was left with Dad, and my brother and sister went with relatives, I think.
And so you were stuck here.
That was the finish of it.
How long have you been in Broken Hill now?
I come back here in 1960. I came back here. I was 20.
Just as we are wrapping up, I hear a call to prayer start. This is scheduled on a plug-in radio in the anteroom, 5 times a day. When the mosque was in use, the call to prayer would be sung verbally from the mosque's ground to summon the men in the nearby Afghan camp. Pamela Rzeczkowski, author of In the Tracks of Camel Men, document the memory of Abdul Fazula, an Afghan descendant. He vividly recall witnessing Muhammad Rafiq standing on the cement outside the mosque, cupping his hands with his palms outwards besides his face, issuing the call to prayer. Through his voice, the sacred call echoed over the camp, drifting toward the Ghan town situated at the northern end of Chapel Street. If the devotees were not near a mosque for the morning or evening prayers, they would pray wherever they were. Many old-timers from Broken Hill recall seeing Afghans in the bush working with their camel trains, stopping midway at a certain time, kneeling on their mats and praying.
So, Bobby, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure speaking to you.
That's all right. That's real good to meet up with you.
Currently in Broken Hill, there is no operational mosque, although there is a Sufi bookstore in town which offers prayer ceremonies. The museum is housed in the small anteroom of the mosque and displays camel bells, nose pegs, photographs, original stepping stones, camel saddles, traditional headgear, and other items associated with Islam. The mosque is open Tuesday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for a gold coin donation and can be opened for worship on request.
Some people come here, some Muslim people come here, they want to come and pray. I just come over and open up for them, let them pray. I don't pray because I was never taught. Dad never taught me nothing. Only thing he taught me was how to run away. Anyhow, I just look after for the history and to keep the history going, you know.
Despite being born with a Muslim name, Amin Nullah Shamrose, Bobby was not raised Muslim. He's one of the last descendants of Cameliers in Broken Hill, and his pride in his lineage absolutely radiates. Journals and diaries of early European explorers report with admiration of the Afghans, their unwavering commitment to Islam, excellent character, reliability, and stamina. Yet, the contributions of the camel drivers often went unrecognised, with history books written to favour the white explorers who led the expeditions. While the legacy of the Cameliers is often forgotten, some place names still show their lasting impacts. Beige's Hill in WA and Cameron's Well in the remote Northern Territory serve as quiet reminders of their spirit. These remnants, plus the Broken Hill Mosque Museum, serve as a reminder of how South Asians were really indispensable to Australia's growth and development as a nation. Thanks for listening to Roadshow and Tell. If you enjoyed this deep dive into a specialty museum, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We're a new podcast, so if you want to help support us, please share it with a friend and leave a rating and review. If you're involved with or know of a regional or specialty museum that should be featured, please get in touch at roadshowandtell@gmail.com. I'm your host, Kate. Roadshow and Tell was edited and produced on the lands of the Gadigal people. I acknowledge the traditional custodians of the various lands on which you may be listening from, and the lands that the museums featured in this podcast reside on. I also acknowledge any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people listening to this podcast. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and celebrate the diversity of Aboriginal peoples and their ongoing cultures and connections to the lands and waters of Australia.